Hey, on the show today is one of my favorite players that I've covered in my career in sports broadcasting and sports media in general. I know that as media people, we're not supposed to play favorites. We're not supposed to have any biases whatsoever. That's my favorite rule to break because I 1,000% have biases and I 1,000% have favorites. And Sol Mercado is right up there for me, man. Definitely number one. With a bullet of people I just enjoy watching on the basketball court because of how graceful and strong and impactful and forceful and at the same time smooth he's been on the basketball court and off court, just one of the all-time great personalities we've ever had in the PBA. This is a really fun conversation where we talk about his start in the PBA, his favorite moments, the infamous Justin Brownlee shot that he inbounded, all that, plus, you know, talking about the real versions of all the other players that we know and love. It's great. Saul's always an open book, and I'm glad to have him on the podcast. Let's go. Let's get to it. As always, recorded from the Gatorade Studio, produced and made possible by the amigo Toby from HR. Original art is by Alan Martin, and original theme music is a track called Tropical Vikings by Careless Music Manila. Shout out to King Wow, Mr. Brett Jackson, for still providing the soundtrack to the podcast. Everybody's bumping and grinding. The people bump and grind in quarantine, but they still really like the song. Gotten a lot of feedback about the music, so check them out, Careless Music Manila. My name is Nico Ramos. This is the Call to Arms podcast.
Something going on around the islands. Money flowing wherever I've been promised. Just another Viking in the tropics. Taking over, trying to stop this novice. Make it killing, I'm finna conquer. I'm a dreamer, the floor is lava. Something going on around the islands.
We got the Soul Train on the podcast today. This has been a long time coming, and I'm so happy you made time for us, Saul. Welcome to the Call to Arms podcast. Thanks for being here, man.
Hey, looking forward to what we got going here.
Yeah, my entire intention between now and when we finish this podcast is for you not to get fined. So I'll try, as I always do, anytime you and I are on record, I will try to make sure to keep you out of trouble, because a lot of the times you don't seem to care, which is why you make the perfect podcast guest.
Oh man, I just speak my mind, you know what I'm saying? But I've grown a little bit. I've gotten a little older, a little wiser, so, you know, might be a little different.
All right. We'll see. There's a lot of things that we want to touch on. And there's a lot of things that the people who listen to this podcast have, you know, sent in ever since we started the podcast back in season one, when they said, you know, Sol Mercado would be the perfect guy to have on your podcast because he's as open as a book as we've seen in the PBA, and you're not someone who hesitates to speak what's on your mind. You have very, very strong thoughts on a whole lot of things. I guess I want to start off with the elephant in the room, and I want to start off with I don't want to make you uncomfortable at the very start of this, but it's very controversial. Simon and Siso is somewhere in that same premises, in the same household as you are right now. Give us your clear, unfiltered thoughts on Simon and Siso, and how it's been being in isolation with him. I'm not sure enjoying is the word I would use to describe what your experience has been being around Simon so much.
Yeah, it's been pretty painful. Not playing. I mean it's cool, man. Like it's better than being in, you know what I'm saying, lockdown or whatever by yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like you're able to hold each other accountable, get some work done, push each other to not just be lazy and not do anything daily. You know what I'm saying? So it's been cool, man. Like I said, like you just saw, he just walks around with it out of shirt off all day. And you know what I'm saying? Sometimes I just got to tell him, put a shirt on, or, you know, but other than that, man, it's been cool being living with him.
The whole shirt thing with Splashy's been a long thing. I don't think we can convince him to put a t-shirt on. I mean, we've all tried, but it's kind of your fault because you've kept him in shape and you've actually pushed him to be in better shape over the last year plus. So some of this is on you.
Yeah, it's either a sandal or no shirt for him. I don't think he owns a t-shirt.
Now, Saul, obviously you've had one of the most decorated careers in the PBA, and it's a career that, as you know, I've personally been such a huge, massive fan of. When we talk about the PBA years and years from now, when you're talking to the kids and the grandkids and stuff like that, and they ask you, what was it like playing in the PBA? What's the first memory that comes to mind? What's off the top of the dome, the first thing that you remember when you look back, I guess, years and years from now, when you start looking back at your playing days? What's the top memory for you?
For me, man, I wouldn't say one specific memory, but I would just say the journey, man. It's been a journey for sure, to say the least. Just a lot of lessons learned. Like you said, saying decorated career is a nice way of saying it, but you know, I've definitely been through a lot, but the journey of just going through what I went through, going from team and, you know, being misunderstood and playing with a chip on my shoulder in my earlier years and evolving into a different type of player to want to win a championship and things like that. But for sure, I mean, that series of my first championship ever in the PBA, when Justin hit that shot, people had their phones out. You could just see like the whole court was illuminated because everyone had their flash on trying to capture the moment. And for him to hit that shot was definitely a memory I'll never forget. And I think a lot of people will not forget that. It was a crazy shot and a crazy experience for sure.
Now, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, because you know, anytime you're a basketball fan and someone says, oh, remember when Justin hit the shot? Everybody knows what you're talking about. Right. Right? It's Brownlee. It's in the finals. It's for Ginebra. Obviously, playing for Ginebra is a whole different type of beast. All due respect to all the other teams, all the other fan bases in the PBA. The least controversial thing you could ever say about the PBA is that playing for Ginebra is just on a whole other level. Talk us through the timeout right before that shot. Talk us through what you were hearing, what you guys were talking about, and what you saw and where you were specifically when he let that shot go.
Well, like you said, I just want to elaborate on that. Yeah, man, playing for Ginebra is definitely a whole nother level. Like I always say, that I wish every single person that played in the PBA or is going to play in the PBA can just experience one time playing for Ginebra. You know, it's just different. Like the atmosphere, the fans, the love you get. It's you know, the organization. It's just a different level, especially with Coach Tim over there now, just kind of leading that team. But yeah, that shot. I was the one that inbounded it. I was the inbounder. And, you know, during the timeout, we thought that they were going to foul, right? Because they had a foul to give, actually. So So we thought that there were it was going to be less time. If I remember correctly, I really feel like Justin was supposed to be like the decoy. I think I was supposed to hit L.A. coming off a curl was my first option, right? He was supposed to come off a curl because everyone's going to be just focused on Justin, but he wasn't open and Justin just kind of came to the ball and I gave it to him and went to the corner and he pulled it a little like deeper than I thought he was going to take one more dribble. I think Durham thought he was going to take another dribble too, because he didn't get a chance to foul him. He kind of just let it go early and I just crashed the boards just in case he missed, and when it went in, I just went sprinting for him. Just as soon as it went in, when it went in, like I went dead. Like you cannot hear yourself think. Like the arena was crazy loud. Like everyone was going crazy. You could just not hear. I just kind of zoned, like blacked out, and just chased him, jumped on him. I think if you look at the video, it's like me and maybe Scotty or me and LA were like the first ones to get to him. But yeah, that was crazy, man. That's what I remember the most, was the fans going crazy as soon as the shot went in.
So as you walk out of that timeout, right, as the inbounder, obviously all the responsibility is on you, right? We know at any level of basketball, the two most important players in a play like that is who's inbounding the ball and who the targets are, who the play is drawn up for. And, you know, you could argue that whoever is inbounding the ball, sometimes the coach trusts just as much as the person he wants to shoot that ball. Right. But you're there, the ball gets handed to you. And as you alluded to earlier, everybody has their, not just their camera phones on, but no one told people to do it. It was just like this instinctive kind of sensing of the moment that Ginebra fans had. They all turned on their lights.
Yeah.
They all turned on the flashlights on their phone, which is completely unnecessary to take the video because, I mean, you're in a PBA arena. Right. That's the most well-lit place. That's the best lighting you could get for a video. But everybody just, you know, in a matter of a full timeout, the PBA just turns on their flash. Did you notice that when you have the ball and the crowd is there, obviously in the background? Did you notice that was happening, or was it something that you didn't necessarily take note of until after the fact?
No, I noticed when we were walking out of the timeout, when I was walking, because it was the opposite side of our bench, right? So I'm walking across from our bench, and as soon as we come out of timeout, I just saw it, and I was like, this is unreal. Like, I remember thinking to myself, like, if we win right now, this is going to go crazy. This is about to be nuts right now. Because they actually just missed like a shot to go up. I think Durham might have missed like a layup or something that came out that would have put them up. Right. And it was insane, bro. Like, just walking out and seeing all the lights. Not one person was sitting in their seat. Not one. Everybody was standing. You know what I'm saying? So it was pretty crazy moment for sure. I think like in sports history, like you don't see that anywhere. When it comes to basketball, whatever, anything, like you don't see that. It's such a special moment.
See, if we saw that in a movie or in a TV show, right? If a basketball movie came out today and we were watching that movie and the movie ends like that with a team coming out of a timeout, all their fans turn their flashlights on, and then a three-pointer from, to be honest with you, one or two steps way too deep for comfort, goes up and goes in for the win at the buzzer. You and I would look at each other and say, that's corny. Like, that never happens.
Right.
If it was in a movie, it would be unbelievable.
For sure.
So for it to happen in real life must have been just, I mean, to see it on TV was like, is this real? Like, did that just happen? Of all the Ginebra stories, and there are a million Ginebra stories in the history of that franchise, I'm like, Did I just see that? Was that just like not the greatest moment in PBA history? Just like right there?
It was crazy. Yeah, crazy. I think Yang Yao that was doing the commentating? Because it was pretty funny with the way he said it. He was like, oh! Everybody's reaction was pretty funny.
Now, with all due respect to that team, that Meralco team, that's an all-time great team that we would still be talking about years and years to come if they didn't play you guys in the finals. I think that's what kind of, you know, and too bad for them in a final series, someone has to win, someone has to lose. But if they eke that out and if they win, that for me is going to be one of the all-time forgotten teams, is because of how good that team was.
Oh yeah,
and they get overshadowed by this massive moment.
And they had Jimmy. Was there they any had point Jimmy over there too?
Right, right.
Yeah,
you know, Jimmy was doing his Winter Soldier stuff at that time. Was the hired gun? But was there at any point in the series, being how confident you are, and there's probably very few people as confident as you are, that you looked across and saw that Morocco team and went like, crap, I think they could beat us?
It's honestly you never want to like overlook a team at all. You always want to, you know, understand that they can beat you, you know what I'm saying, if you don't bring your A game or you don't come and play with great effort every single night. But I don't think there was ever a moment where it was like, oh man, you know, they're going to beat us. You know, I didn't feel that with them. I have felt that with San Miguel Beerman when we played them. You know, it's just, you know, when they got Jumar and all those guys over there, it's just kind of like, man, like we got to play perfect in order to beat these guys, right? But once you have Justin Brown there on your team, it's a different story. You always have a chance with that guy. He's such a great winner, and you have Coach Tim and just the way that he prepares us. You come in feeling confident because of the preparation that the coaches give us. So yeah, that's just what it is.
You know, that kind of leads me to, I guess, a larger question. But in that series, playing against, you know, Durham, as talented as Justin is and as special as Justin is, it was rare to find an import pretty much go blow for blow with him. And if there's anyone who came the closest, it was probably Alan Durham.
Oh, yeah.
Playing for Miracle. You picked up that assignment, which I'm sure wasn't fun, and you had to guard him so much of the time. The way that you would guard, whether it was imports or best, you know, wing player on the opposing team, what was the moment in your career when you decided that, you know, as great of a scorer and of an offensive force as I am, and you were, we'll get to that, I'm going to be a lockdown defender now? Because that's the most unfair thing that I could probably say about you as someone who's followed your career as closely as you have. Because I remember turning on the TV once and I go, wait, did Saul just decide he's just going to be like the best defender in the league? Like, when did this happen? How did that, I guess, that shift happen for you?
Coach Tim. I mean, honestly, it was Coach Tim is such a defensive minded coach, and you're not going to play for him unless you're buying into his defensive principles. And he just kind of came to me one day and was like, look, the ability you have on offense, the quickness, the strength, the speed, that could be used on the defensive end as well, you know? And so I'm able to, because I'm strong, I'm able to, you know, guard bigger guys. And then because I'm quick and fast, I could also guard smaller guys. So he kind of gave me an opportunity for us to switch a lot of things and, you know, for him to use me in different ways. And I was just looking for ways to stay on the floor, you know, whatever it was. So I felt like that would have been my best opportunity, because we had so many other offensive weapons. My best opportunity to bring value to our team was to just buy in defensively. And, you know, I've always been someone that could pick my points when I want to defend. You know, even when I was like on Barack Obama, I wanted to guard Al Thornton after he guarded 50, you know, just because I'm a competitor. Like, so I've always been someone, but I just never bought in fully of doing it full time, you know what I'm saying? Because I've always been someone out, you know, you kind of pace yourself because you want to have energy on the offensive side, which is
right. You've always been on teams that needed your full effort on offense.
Right. So when I was able to just kind of buy in defensively with Hinebra and be that guy defensively, that just kind of took me to another level defensively.
And, you know, it's something that I've personally enjoyed watching, and you know that turn in your career, that acceptance of that role obviously made you a champion, made you extremely valuable to, you know, the most famed franchise in the PBA, which is Hinebra. But I will say though that it still hasn't erased the bitter taste in my mouth for, and I have it right now, I have it on the ready at all times, for something that I felt very, very strongly about in 2013. I'm not sure if you remember this, but in 2013, I wrote on Slam, this is the headline. This is word for word the headline.
I remember.
I'll send the link to you. The headline is, Calvin Abueva will most likely win Sol Mercado's BPC award.
Yeah.
And that was one of the spiciest things that I had written at the time. And you know me, I'm not this hot take artist that's just throwing things out there just to get clicks or comments, stuff like that. But I got a whole lot of people conversing with me. Let's just use that word, conversing with me over my thoughts then. But I stood my ground. It's a hill that I will still die on to this day. You got robbed. As a champion now, and as you said, you're older, you're wiser. Is that something that you look back on and you still feel like, ah, man, that was my trophy?
Absolutely, bro. Like, I led the league in scoring and assists. That's what I'm saying. Like, come on, man. Like, that, how many times has that been done in the history of the league, like, for a conference? So, like, for sure, I felt like if I was on, say I did that on Ginebra or I did that on another team besides Morocco, they were just an up-and-coming team, right? Like, if I did that on any other team, I would have won best player conference without a doubt, right?
Easy.
So I feel like just because, you know, I was on Morocco, we weren't known yet, and we, you know, we weren't that good of a team. We did still make the playoffs that year. But I think they had, like, rules. Like, you had to make it to the semifinals in order to be one of the finalists for that award, right? So I think that's – I kind of put that in my heart. Like, okay, I didn't win it because our team didn't get to the semifinals. But honestly, for sure, like, I felt like that was probably one of my best seasons. Like, there was – that season I was killing everybody, bro. Like, I really was. Like, we were running the dribble drive offense. Everything ran through me. Like, and we were winning games that people weren't expecting us to win. So
– you were hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember one game because I was still working the league at that time. I remember one game I ran up to you during shoot around, and you know, I just asked you how you were, and I was like, you know, you've been killing it and things like that. And then you asked me if this was on the record, off the record, and I said, well, if you have something to say off the record, then it's off the record. What is it? And you were like, yo, just between friends, you're like, I'm not feeling great right now. And then I think it was your ankle or your knee that was bothering you. And I was like, oh, when'd you start feeling it? And then you were like, oh, man, about 2.5 months ago. And then I go, you're leading the league in scoring. And you tweaked it 2.5 months ago? It's still one of the things that I take way too seriously, and I'm glad that I'm not the only one on it. This is a part of what I wrote. I said, everything that I said about Abueva swagger, that applies to Seoul and the Bolts as well. Sure, Psycho Cliff up their hustle highlights a bit, and Mac taking a step back make them look a little bit more orderly. But in the end, the Meralco Bolts go only as far as Sol Mercado's speed of sound shattering crossover, rivaled only by his faster mouth and unparalleled confidence takes them. And I still stand by that today. And I was watching highlights about 2 days ago when we first linked up about doing the podcast. And it still hurts me. I don't know why it hurts me. But that Meralco Bolts team has such a special place in my heart, because when you're a rookie joining the telecast, they usually don't put you on the Ginebra games.
Yeah.
They don't put you on the San Miguel games. You get a lot of the Wednesday 4 p.m. games, right? Mm-hmm. So I was doing a whole lot of the Meralco games at that time. That's how we kind of built a friendship. It was you, and then C. Ross was your backup.
Yeah.
And that entire time, I kept telling everybody who would listen to me, I was like, this is the backcourt. This is it.
We used to always say that. Like, we should be playing together.
This backcourt's going to win championships. Yeah. And then you guys got the chance again at San Miguel, but no one really gave it a true shot, which is still, I think, one of the great what ifs of the PBA. Thanks for letting me go on that little bit of a rant, but yeah, I still feel like you and C. Ross, obviously as dynamic of players as you guys are, and the bond that the two of you have as friends, obviously, could have, should have been just like the backcourt of like the decade.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. I mean, it's all C. Ross's fault, because if he was able to shoot the way he's shooting now, maybe they would have played this more together, right? Because you can't have two guys that really guys aren't, you know, playing them because they can't shoot, right? So that's the big reason of why they didn't play us together a lot, right? Because we're two guys that mainly you would give up the jump shot for, right? So, but now guys can't do that to C. Ross. So if he had that back then, we'd have been all right. So it's his fault.
I'll make sure to let him know. Apart from Chris, one of the tandems that you obviously are well known for is the Fire and Ice combo, when you and Gabe both entered the league with Rain or Shine. And something that not enough people talk about was the stint that you did on the national team with Gabe. And when you guys kind of got back together as Fire and Ice on the national team,
I was
Tom Cruise jumping on my couch. That's how excited I was, because I was like, oh, it's back to the Rain or Shine days. I love it. Only this time they're actually wearing respectable jerseys.
All right.
Because the Rain or Shine jerseys were crazy. but what was that like when you first entered the league with Gabe and just really playing in a way that the PBA had never really seen before?
Yeah, we talk about this all the time. We talk about it with JJ and Mark too. Like, if social media was big back then when we came up, we would be so big right now. Like, we'll watch like old tapes and stuff like that, because we have them like on DVDs, and Cash and O, Gabe's sons, like, they watch like old games, right? And we were doing stuff, bro, in the league, like throwing oops off the backboard, like the numbers we were putting up, like our first year and second year in the league, me and him were 1-2 in like free throw attempts. Like, we were making things happen in the whole league, which was crazy. So we always say, like, man, if social media was big, people would have known us, because we're, like you said, we're playing for Rain or Shine. No one was watching us.
Right.
The only way you heard about us was through the paper, or if you watched a replay, caught a replay. But if social media was back then, people would have heard about us, whether we had the early game on a Wednesday or not, you know? So people weren't really hearing about us, but the things we were doing in the league was pretty crazy. Like, our first couple of years in the league, we were definitely, they were comparing us to like JJ and Mark. So like, even them, they'll tell us, like, man, you guys were exciting. We looked forward to playing you guys. Like, whenever we played you guys, it was always fun, you know? Like, so it was definitely a good time. And I wish social media was bigger back then.
To this day, I cannot, and this isn't an accurate statistical observation, obviously, but to this day, I cannot recall off the top of my head a tandem that was as superior in skill and athleticism as you and Gabe were with the rest of the league at that time.
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense?
No, for sure.
Obviously, now there's a lot of great athletes in the PBA. And, you know, you can't go through a team without having two or three just super athletes. But the way that you guys were playing, you know, in comparison to the way that how the league was playing at that time, much slower,
yeah,
a lot of mid-range jumpers, a lot of slow it down post-ups. You guys would rip it and go.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a lot of times where your teammates would be like, oh, no, oh, we're going?
Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, Saul's like strong enough to get that rebound over a big and he'll just go himself? Or like, oh, Gabe's a point guard?
Yeah, right.
And then it was just crazy. And it was in something that we'd seen up until that point, and I don't think it's something that we've seen since, just because of how special you were compared to competition.
Yeah, man, it was definitely different back then. It was a lot of it just like the NBA, you know, it's evolved. Like, even the PBA's evolved. Like, there was a lot of times they were dumping it down to big guys, Danny I, you know what I'm saying, guys like that. So it was definitely a slower paced game back then, and we kind of like sped it up.
and the jerseys, look, Gabe hates me for this already, right? I mean,
his long ass shorts.
I see him. The shorts are one thing, because that was of the time,
yeah,
right? That was of the time. Although, had you guys worn proper size shorts, I think you at least would have had at least 5 points more each average.
Oh, no.
But I harp on Gabe all the time. I keep telling him, Gabe, you have enough equity with Rain or Shine. You're the greatest Rain or Shine player ever.
Yeah.
Ever. You've been there forever. You've been the captain forever. If you say so, they'll change it. Stop putting the fireball on the jersey, man. It can't be a fireball and a waterfall on this. I know you're a paint company, but it don't make sense. How your jersey have 18 colors
for
on it?
For real,
Gabe always says, well, I can wear any shoes with them and they match. And I go, Gabe, that's not, no.
That's just his perspective. But that's a good perspective to have. But we used to always say our jerseys, like, what the hell are these, bro? Like, and they used to actually use, before, obviously they changed it, they used to actually use like paint, like to,
yes.
So they were like super heavy shorts, and jerseys were all heavy when they get all wet. No, it was crazy.
People would wonder all the time, right? Because they thought that you guys were just young, had a lot of swagger with the long shorts, and they're like, they never tuck their jerseys in. And I'm like, if you got to feel and touch the actual Rain or Shine jerseys from that era, it's impossible to tuck them, yeah, because it doesn't fold.
Doesn't fold.
If you fold it, the paint cracks. The fireball cracks.
For real. The little
it's right so here. It's so crazy. Paul Lee gave me a jersey from, you know, because me and Paul go way back. He gave me a jersey from his Rain or Shine days, and he said, "Here, you can have this one." One, he said, "You can have this one. It's bad luck. It's the one I was wearing when I dislocated my shoulder."
Oh,
and I'm like, "Oh, thanks." And I was like, and then he said, "Second, wear it when you run or when you lift weights. It's like a weighted vest." And I put it on. As soon as you start sweating on that thing, I was like, "Oh no, I appreciate Saul and Gabe even more now, because how you guys got up and were that fast on the court wearing those things,
yeah,
is really the true achievement of that era."
For real.
It's insane.
That's funny. Yeah, those
is that the worst jersey that you've had to wear?
Absolutely, hands down, just without a doubt, for sure.
You went through the neon green Globalport ones, though.
Yeah, but they didn't feel like that. At least they just looked crazy on TV. But
right,
yeah, I mean those the Rain or Shines for sure. Those are hands down the worst.
It also doesn't help, especially when Rain or Shine had some of the chunky boys on the roster, because you could tell the fireball on Bo and JR's jersey was a little bigger than the one on Gabe's jersey. And I'm like, are they adjusting that to scale?
Imagine we had Jai Lewis. Remember Jai Lewis?
Right.
That boy. They had to put like four jerseys together and make his.
That was two cans of paint on that one jersey alone. Anyway, anytime I get to talking about Rain or Shine, I have to. Like, I swore an oath to bring up the jersey so that before he hangs it up, Gabe can have just a clean, nice jersey.
He's got to ask him one time. Just ask
without him. No Captain Planet elements on it. And I'm just like, three colors is doing a lot already. Three colors is doing a lot. 18 is way too much.
You fuel us, we fuel you. Gatorade studies the best athletes to create the most advanced sports fuel with fluids, electrolytes, and carbohydrates. So you can play your best. Nothing beats Gatorade.
Back to our conversation with Saul in just a second. In the meantime, you know, as we are recording from the Gatorade studio, we're also inviting you guys to log on and subscribe to us on YouTube. We'll be doing a bunch of fun YouTube stuff. Just search for Call to Arms Podcast. And visit the website, www.calltoarmspodcast.com. That is our side hustle sponsor again for this episode, because it's our own side hustle, and we invite you to go and pre-order the merch while you still can. Pre-order closes on the 11th, so make sure that you guys go and pre-order your shirts. Again, www.calltoarmspodcast.com. Everyone who's ordered already, appreciate you. Tell your friends, your family, and we should be shipping those shirts out to you guys very, very soon. All right, back to the pod. Okay, there's this video clip that I want to play back to you. Toby has it, and he'll start prepping it, and then it's something that I want you to watch, and it's something that I want you to react to. A couple of clues about the clip. It's from January 2012, if I'm not mistaken. You're in it. I took it. You were willingly part of the video, so don't worry. It's not like you, like, on the side picking your nose or anything like that. No, I would never do you like that. The context is, as Toby preps the video, and I'm sorry, Toby, putting you on the spot here. Myself and a few friends of mine, had put together this huge, massive NBA 2K tournament. Massive. Mm-hmm. Like, first prize was like 500 grand. Like, and, you know, it was just this open invite. And you joined. You were kind enough to lend some of your time, because up until that point, no one you knew could beat you in 2K.
Yeah.
And I played you in 2K, and I was like, oh, no, like, Saul's, like, legit. I mean, we didn't have a lot of professional video gamers back then. Yeah. But, you know, if we did, you could probably hang. This video I took when you were unceremoniously kicked out of the tournament. And once we're ready, Tobe, are we ready? Let's play it back so that Saul can get a little blast from the past from his 2012 days.
I'm heated, dog. We're here with Saul Mercado, eliminated in the third round of the 2K Classics tournament. What happened there, Saul?
Well, first off, in the beginning, I had a glitch controller. So my controller, I was having wide open shots, my guy wasn't shooting. Somebody changed the controller setup to not, it was on alternate B rather than default. So when I was going to shoot, it wasn't shooting. So he got out to a nice little lead. I came back, you know, and then after that, he did some kind of glitch move on me. You know, where I get into the paint, my guys just automatically lose the ball. So I don't know, it's rigged, man. And then he changed the speed. Hey, every dog has his day.
Hey, Chris Ross. What's up, what do you guys say to Saul getting glitched? Hey, he got glitched.
My guy says he got glitched. Hey, he won't play me again.
He won't play me again.
He should have won. Chris, he got glitched too?
I had Chalmers at the four the whole game, and I was doubling Ibaka for the full court. I don't know why.
He just sucks. I got glitched.
Just sucks. I got glitched. Oh God, classic. Yeah.
Now here's the detail I forgot to leave out. That person who you say won't play you again and knocked you out the third round of the tournament. Do you remember who it was?
Nah, I remember some kid.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it was some 14-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Who after that was kept telling his dad over and over and over again. He said, "I played Saul Mercado, Dad. I played Saul Mercado," and then the kid said, "Although he was kind of mad afterwards."
I still stick to it, man. I remember he cheated. See, where is that kid? What is he, about 27 now? I'll play him again right now.
He's a grown man right now.
I know, right? He got kids and shit.
I love, though, how Chris Pacana, shout out to Chris, by the way, who's an all-time just great guy, is there being like, I had Chalmers at the four, yeah, doubling Ibaka full court, and he's like blaming it on some glitch. I was like, I don't think a glitch does that, man. You sub your own players.
Yeah, that's why I was like, nah, he just sucks. I got glitched. That's funny, because during that time, me and him would always play each other. Me, Picada, C. Ross. Like, we would always just play that game. That was good times, man. Oh, that is classic. I can never just take a loss. Something had to happen. That's what it was.
Because that leads me to the next topic that I wanted to bring up with you. And, you know, I did this profile on you for Slam Magazine, and, you know, it was entitled Unbeatable.
I remember that.
A lot of it was born out of my frustration because they stole a BPC out of you, which, as I said earlier, still hurts me to this day. But when I did that article, my editor at the time, Miko Halili, said, "You're going to have a great time with this article because Saul's an open book. Come up to Saul and, you know, just, you know, tell him you want to interview him. He'll give you the entire day and just talk straight." And I go, "No, I know that, but I think I want to try something different." So I talked to everyone except you.
Yeah.
Talked to teammates, talked to friends, talked to C. Ross. I remember C. Ross and Gabe and I like all went out to dinner and just talked about you. And the piece is called Unbeatable because that's the first thing they say. He's like, "You know, you can't beat Saul at anything, right?" And I go, "Oh, he's that good? Oh, he's that good." He's like, "He's good at everything. Oh, you can't beat him?" And he's like, No. "Even if you win, you didn't beat him. There's a difference. Just because you won doesn't mean he lost."
Yeah.
Whether, what was that? Bowling, whether it was cards, Talk to us about that competitive spirit.
Man, I was the ever since I was the kid, man, like even when I was young, when we lost, like I would cry. Like I was the ultimate competitor, like ultra competitive, even as just a little kid, bro. Like my mom would take me to Pop Warner football, our games. And if we lost, like I'm over there, there's a video that she has me holding my pads and my helmet and just crying because we just lost. Like I hate losing. Like I had to really, that was something when I talk about growth, like I really had to grow into that and understanding like losing is a part of life. You know what I'm saying? Like you could learn a lot from losing if you can actually embrace it, you know? And that was something that I just never did. Like losing was not an option. If I lost, it was because of a reason, not because of me or, you know, I wasn't being accountable. And that's really where it came from, man. It was just always, look at the video. I got glitched. You know what I'm saying? Like it wasn't because I just wasn't good enough and I got to get better and this kid was really good and he outplayed me. No, I got glitched. You know what I'm saying? I just couldn't accept losing, you know, and that's just what it was. And especially with your, with our friends and stuff like that, and we're doing stuff that we're competing in, you know, I'm the guy, like even everyone's just trying to have fun. I'm trying to win in every single thing we do. It don't matter what we do. I'm trying to win. If it's us trying to eat the most chips or whatever, it didn't matter what it was. Like I found competition in every single thing that we did. And that's just, that's always been me. Like it's, as I've gotten older, it's tapered down a little bit. You know, I'm still a competitor, but you know, I just understand not everybody's like that. And it doesn't always rub people the right way, you know? So, but yeah, that's just what it was. And that's a perfect title, bro. Like unbeatable. And that, they hit it right on the button of just saying like, even if you win, he didn't lose.
I remember one time we were out with, you know, our good friend Banj, right? When Banj was still in the Philippines, I remember we were out one time and then we ran into you. We were walking into the spot, and then, you know, we were just chatting and stuff like that. And then I spot Gabe, who I knew we were going to meet up with that night. And then I tell you, I go, oh, Saul, there's where Gabe's over there. There's a table. Let's go there. And you're like, we're not talking to Gabe right now. And then I go, oh, okay. Like, I know better than to ask, right? I'm like, you guys are brothers. You're not talking. You must be fighting about, like, something, right? So I was like, I don't want to ask. I don't want to get caught up in this. Like, you know, I don't want to overstep my grounds here. Like, you know, we're cool, but we're not boys like that. So I was just like, oh, all right. Okay. Like, you know, I just let it go. And you're standing there just, like, at the bar, right? And then I'm there with you. And then I go, I'm just going to go hit the John real quick. And you're like, all right, cool. I'll be here. So I go to the bathroom. On my way back to the bathroom, I run into Gabe, right? So me and Gabe were catching up. And then I see you, like, through the whole place, right? I see you. You're at the bar. And then you're looking at me talking to Gabe. And then you mouth, and I'll never forget this, you mouth. You're like, oh, it's like that? Okay. And then I was like, what? And then I walk up to you. And then I go, yeah, no, sorry. I ran into Gabe. And you're like, no, you can hang out there, dude. And then I was like, oh, no, now he's pissed at me. I was like, what happened? What are they fighting about? So I go back, right, because now I'm banished, right? I go back and I go to Gabe. And then Gabe goes, Saul sent you back, huh, because you were talking to me. And I go, what you guys fight about? And you're like, yeah, I beat him at 2K last night. And I go, oh, this is crazy. 20 minutes later, we were all together, like, eating pizza somewhere. And I was like, this is insane. This is insane.
Yeah.
But that's how it is. When people ask me, who's the most competitive guy you've ever, like, run across in the league? I go, it's Saul Mercado by a landslide, and you guys have no idea. No idea.
Yeah, dog. That's crazy to even think about. We used to always just have banters and stuff like that, just over straight anything, just games. It didn't matter what it was. Even me and Jimmy, bro, like, I think about it. When I was living with Jimmy, like, my first year out here, I was living with Jimmy. And we would play 2K, right? This is when we were playing on, I want to say, it might have been Dreamcast or something like that. I don't know if it was PlayStation. But we're playing 2K, bro. And, like, I always had LeBron James and he always had a Kobe Bryant, right? And I would hit, we would literally text each other, bro. Like, he'd be at practice and I'd be at practice. Hey, Bron said he'll see you tonight at 7. Like, we would, like, for real, like, text each other, like, talking shit about, like, he's Kobe and I'm Bron, and we're talking shit to each other. It's so funny, bro. Like I would just find anything to compete in, and I was going to do it.
That's an element to what made you as great as you are, you know, in the league. And, you know, that's really what truly set you apart. I remember those matchups after C. Ross got traded out of Meralco, and there was about a three game straight that you guys played each other. At least one of you got a tech. And I remember telling the referees, I'm like, just let them go. Like, they're not gonna do anything. They're not gonna throw hands.
Right.
But you can't stop the two of those guys from like talking smack to each other. You just can't. But you talk the most smack with the guys that you were closest with.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was something that was hilarious to me, because sometimes you guys would arrive in the same car, go at it, and like get called for like double text. And then just
ride
go
all together,
and have
yeah.
dinner together afterwards.
Yeah. That's how it's always been, man. People used to always think too, like, oh, because you guys are friends or close and brothers, like that you guys are going to, you know, take it easy on each other in the game, or, you know, give up certain strategies, or, you know, if you hang out with them, they're going to know what we're going to do because you're going to tell them. And I was like, no way, it's the opposite. Like, I'm going at my brothers harder than anybody I ever, like anybody else on the court, I'm going at them the most. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the opposite. It's not like we're buddy-buddy on the court at all. Like, you want to have those bragging rights. You want to win. You know, you don't want to be leaving the game and they have all the, you know, the bragging rights at home or whatever it is at dinner and stuff like that. Like, you don't want that at all.
I mean, it's not like it's Junmar, who's this like universally liked guy.
Yeah.
it's actually the opposite. Like, if there's someone who you're playing against who you know isn't going to be angry, whatever happens during these 48 minutes, whatever I do to you, whatever you do to me, there's a comfort level that we're going to be cool after this.
Yeah.
Then that just kind of gives you the license to go even harder at them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and even speaking of nice guys, like, I have to throw them under the bus because everyone thinks Gabe's like this nice little angel, perfect person. But like, Gabe does.
There it is.
Gabe talks shit too. Like, he's like, ask Joe. When me and Gabe were teammates and we played against Joe at Alaska, because we knew Joe couldn't talk mess because Coach Tim hates that. Like, we would go at him so bad, and he would just get so mad at us. And we have Rob Wainwright, too. Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Those were the funnest times.
Gabe Norwood's out here catching strays. I'm sorry, Gabe. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you're not here to defend yourself. and actually, that was one of the questions I had lined up as we come up close to the end of the pod here, is everybody thinks when they hear about Gabe, who, you know, I've spoken with, had on the pod multiple times, one of people I consider truly a great friend, or they talk about Jimmy, who is everybody's captain. He's like the national captain, national hero, and indeed he is. But those guys, what a lot of people don't know is how nasty those guys can be if they're competitive, if the game's on the line, whether it's basketball or spades or bowling or whatever it is. So I wanted to give you, Mr. Open Book, an opportunity to tell us what it's really like competing against, you know, some of these guys. If it's Gabe, it's Gabe. If it's Jimmy, it's Jimmy. If it's Joe, who everyone thinks is this lovable guy and is funny and dances a lot during the All-Star game, but a lot of people don't see his competitive side. Everyone's catching strays right now. Everyone's fair game. Go for it.
No, I mean, for sure. Like, you just mentioned Joe, and you know, everybody knows we're super close. And Joe is like, when he's on the court, you know, he's quiet. You know, he kind of goes about his business, and, you know, but he's subtle with what he does. But he is a super, that's why he's such a winner. He is a super competitor, man. Like, he wants, you know, things to be perfect. You know, he wants everybody to be in line. And that's what makes him such a great teammate, is he leads by example, by the way that he works, the example that he sets, the way he plays the game on being selfless. But he's a super big competitor, but like not off the basketball court when it's just us and there's nobody around, like he is one of the biggest shit talkers, bro. Like, and he does it in a way where it's like funny, like where he just humiliates you. Like really, he's someone that when I talk to, and we're going back and forth, like it could get really, really ugly. Like me and him have gotten really ugly just by just talking shit about to each other about things, you know what I'm saying? And then it just escalates. But you know, not to say like Joe is one of the best guys, you know, I've been around, like, you know, father, teammate, like he really holds pride in being the best teammate ever. Like that's what he wants to be known for. You know, just being the best teammate ever. He doesn't want to be known as the best player or whatever it is. Like, he just wants to be the best teammate. And I really believe that that's who he is. Gabe, I always say it. Like, I always say everyone thinks, like, Gabe's perfect and he's this angel, but he's not. But he really is. He really is, to be honest. Like,
that's what makes it funny.
I just try and hate on him because it's like, man, we say it all the time. Like, me and Joe joke about it. Like, man, there's only one perfect person in this world, and that's Gabe. Like, when we're talking mess to each other, like, you're not perfect. You're not Gabe. Like, you know, because we really do believe, like, the way he lives his life, he's a really good dude. Like, genuinely, if you have a problem with Gabe, there's something wrong with you, right? Like, he gets along with everybody. Like, he has great morals and stuff like that. But I have been around Gabe and very, very close to Gabe, right? Everybody knows we're best friends. And we've had moments where, you know, we might have been a little intoxicated or whatever. And Gabe talks mess when he gets in his zone more than anybody I know. Like, literally more than anybody I know. And he does it in, like, a subtle way. Like, he does it, like, you're like, hold on. Is he really frying this person right now? Like, is he doing it? And he'll get on a roll and just keep going. It's hilarious. And then he'll catch himself like, all right, I am frying him. I need to stop. Like, but that's how he is, bro. He's so funny. And like you say, you mentioned Jimmy. If it comes to competing, that dude's one of the biggest competitors. Like, and that's what makes him great. You know, he the way he even being around him when he coaches, like, he wants to be the best. Like, he doesn't do anything to be mediocre. And that's what I like about him. You know, and I'm the same way. Like, I hate not being good in things. You know what I'm saying? If I'm gonna do something, I want to be the best at it. You know. So that's kind of his approach, and that rubbed off on me early on when I first came out here and lived with him. He showed me like what it meant to be a professional, you know, and so I saw that with him, the way he worked, the way he approached things. That's who Jimmy is, man. So, I've been blessed to be around all those guys. Everybody knows Chris. He's the biggest baby on a court, but you know, it's because he wants to win and he, you know, feels the game should be played a certain way, you know, and it's the right way. So he's an ultra competitor too. I really believe, like, I don't think all of us would get along if we weren't the same, you know, in some way. I might just be a little overboard with it sometimes, but I've grown and gotten better at that. But yeah, I mean, we're all cut from the same cloth, man. We're all super competitive.
And, you know, it's evident when, you know, when you watch the tape, when you see what is common with you guys. The resumes are one thing. The championships, they're another thing. Those are important as well. But how your teammates and competitors talk about you guys, for me, is really the true mark of you know, what you've invested and what you've contributed to the league and what your legacy is. And, you know, one of the things that I've always kind of found out anytime I'm talking to players, anytime I'm talking to coaches, I had Coach Tim on season one of this podcast pretty early on, and you're a name that always floats up. You're a name that always, you know, gets brought up, you know, for a multitude of things, right? Maybe it's because you're an incredible asset to a locker room because of, you know, your personality, your leadership, your willingness to sacrifice, and things like that. And, you know, I think that that's really, truly, you know, a great, great legacy to hang your hat on. in your career. Last two things before I let you get out of here. One is, and I asked this to Jimmy when he was on, there are guys that you expect a person like a player like Saul Mercado would have trouble with on the basketball court, you know, in terms of someone you have to defend or, you know, who defends you. You know, obviously, you know, C. Ross is a, you know, legendary defender, all-time defensive team, things like that. The imports obviously are a tough. That's what I'm saying. The imports obviously they're tough to cover for you, but you do a great job as well. Is there an unexpected name, or are there any unexpected names out there that are gonna, you know, they're gonna surprise me and the listeners that you say, oh, you know, that guy, whenever he had to guard me, you know, gave me a little problem, or whenever I had to guard him, gave me problems?
One person I hated guarding, and this is a name early on in my career, was Rimrin Ratwala. Like, ooh. He was, to me, he
dirty.
He was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. Like, the way that he was, his movement without the ball, I hated guarding him because he was constantly moving, right? He's somebody that, you know, that's early on in my career. Him and Willie Miller, to me, is the hardest cover for me. Like, that, even I think early in my career, like, he was still kind of in his prime, but he started, you know, when he was my teammate and at Globalport, he was already kind of towards the end of his career. But that dude was so nasty, bro. They're like, you cannot guard him. He moved at his own pace. You can never speed him up. He's strong. He could post you. He could shoot it. He could handle it. Like, every single thing that you needed in a player, he got. You know what I'm saying? And so he is probably the hardest cover for me of my entire career, was Willie Miller. And also Jimmy. Jimmy was hard because he was so little and he knew how to use ball screens so well. Like, you would almost lose him in the ball screen because he was very...
But you can't touch him.
And you can't touch him because he knows how to, like, flail and do all that, right? Like, he knows how to sell a call. And I'm, like, way bigger than him. So anytime I touch him, he does all that. He's going to get the call. And obviously, you have to pick him up right after, you know, they call it Jimmy, right? Jimmy, what is it? Jimmy Range or whatever from Jimmy Country. Or you have to pick him up right away, you know? So he's a very a hard cover. One guy that really surprised me, and I played with him on the national team, that I didn't expect to be somebody that mixes it up and was really dirty. And when he guarded me, like, I saw that, is Chris Chu.
I knew we were going to get to Chris Chu.
Bro, that dude, honestly, I'll go to war with him. He's somebody I would go to battle with. Like, he is a dog. Bro, like, he does it, and he got this little pretty boy face, like, innocent face. Like, he mixes it up. Like, he'll get in there and dirty you up, throw an elbow, step under you when you're rebounding. Like, he does not care. That dude, he, like, surprised me. He was one guy that really, really surprised me. I was like, oh, wow, you're like that? Okay. All right.
And because of all of his years, he's an accomplished everything, right? I mean, Chris Chu's an accomplished everything, right? He graduated from Ateneo, which is one of the toughest schools, as we know, in the Philippines. One of the toughest degrees in Ateneo, being a champion basketball player. And then, obviously, Graham Business had a great career in the PBA, national team, great businessman, right? But he's also, like, an accomplished media person. You know, he's been hosting TV shows pretty much his entire career. So he, and I truly believe this, he knows how the game is filmed. He knows how the game is covered. He knows his camera angles.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to hide and use the angles for the refs, right? But Chris has this incredible talent. He has the best innocent face in the history of the PBA. He has the best. Wait, what? No. Like, ever.
And he's one of the nicest guys. He's one of the nicest guys off the court. So you, like, don't expect it, right?
that's how they lull you in, man. That's how I knew we were gonna get to Chris Chu sooner or later. By the way, all of this, ultimate compliment to Chris Chu.
Oh yeah, because for sure.
I mean he is, as you said, just one of the just biggest, most competitive dogs we've seen in the PBA.
And you don't expect it. Yeah, you don't expect it. That's what I'm saying. He's somebody I would go to battle with for sure.
He'll catch you when you're not looking. You better watch out for those elbows. So last thing, what's next? You know, obviously the pandemic, the lockdown, not helping anybody. But you know, as we've seen from social media, things like that, you're probably as good in shape as you've been in your career. What's next for you? What are the plans here moving forward?
I mean, I definitely still want to play maybe a couple more years. Hopefully I could play for a competitor and help out, you know, somebody that a contender that wants to win a championship, and I could just come in and kind of fill a spot or be a leader in a locker room or whatever it is. And I definitely want to stay around the game. I've always been like that, like even with Coach Tim, like wanting to be stepping into coaching when I'm done playing, you know what I'm saying? Coaching and developing guys. And, you know, I've been around a lot of coaches and been around the game, and I love the game a lot. And I've been a student of the game ever since, you know? And so I want to be able to share my knowledge and my experience with the next generation, the guys coming up. So hopefully I could stay around the game when I am done playing, you know, like I said, hopefully I could get picked up this coming season, or if there is a season, whatever. But other than that, man, I've just been trying to stay healthy, stay out of trouble and get into business stuff. Just been hanging around some good company, some successful business guys, and just picking their brain and going into that. Obviously basketball is going to be done pretty soon for me. So, just trying to make that transition, a lot smoother for myself. But yeah, other than that, man, just trying to give back to the people that are around me, spend time with my loved ones. If anything, if this pandemic has taught us anything, is just, you know, relationships and our memories is what's important, right? You know what I'm saying? The money and all the other stuff doesn't matter. What matters is our time spent with the people that we love and care about. And so I'm just trying to do that, man, and let the people know that have been around me how much I appreciate them and love them. And that's just kind of just been my mission lately.
Yeah, and you know, whichever team it is that you're going to play for next, as with every team you've played for, is going to be extremely lucky to have you. And you know, I can't wait for the train to start chewing again.
Appreciate that.
And you know, running over people again, getting to the cup, and you yelling "end one" louder than I've ever heard anyone yell "end one" ever. But Saul, I mean, you know, can't do these things without giving people the flowers that, you know, that they deserve. You've been, ever since you started playing, one of my favorite players, not just to watch as a fan, not just to cover as a person in the media, but to get to know and to learn from. You're a true class act. You know, I'm such a fan of the crossover. I'm such a fan of the Hezzy spin move that no one can figure it out. I mean, they know where you're going, but they just don't have the pounds to cover it. But above those, I'm such a fan of how candid you are as a person, how great of a friend you are, how amazing a father figure you are. You know, as someone who's gonna be a dad in a few months, you know, you're one of those people that I look to in terms of being a role model, and you've been a role model to me. And you know, gotta make sure I give you your flowers, man. So
hey, man,
appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, man, I appreciate that, and it's crazy that you do that, because like I said, man, I've been on that tip, man, of just, we take life for granted sometimes, and the time that we have for granted. Like, you just never know when someone's going to be here one day and not the next day, right? And so, like, you could ask Gabe and Joe and all those guys, their birthday has just passed, and Chris, and I've just been at their birthday, and what I'll do is I'll just be like, look, man, I just want to give you your flowers, and I'll start it up and let them know how I feel about them, and everybody would go around the table. And it's been really special, man, to really give people their flowers that we care about, because we just don't know, you know, when they're going to be gone or when we're going to be gone. You know, our time is expired here. So, man, I appreciate what you said, man. And since day one, bro, you've been A1, you know what I'm saying? Like, you've always been a real one and been genuine. And I could see the work that you put in. Like you said, you were a rookie, you know, when we first came in together. And, you know, just to see you evolve, congrats on, you know, you and your girl about to have a baby and all that. I'm sure you're going to be an amazing father, but you've been a great dude since day one. And I appreciate you fully, bro. And you know, I'm here for you, whether it's an interview or, spend time, advice, whatever it is, man, I'm here for you. So it's all love, brother.
Yeah. And I'm on the hunt to find that kid who beat you, in 2K.
Yeah.
And,
tell him I'm looking for him.
I'm out to prove that he glitched you. And we're going to correct that and the BPC that they stole from you. And then my work will be done.
I like that, brother.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, brother. Be easy.
I want a million lives. I want a billion profits when all that I got is a villainous mind. I keep a reel in the pocket while you hear the venomous lies. I do not speak like a prophet, cause I got a million styles. Let's see what's really inside. Pulling over in the whip, flying out another.